Finance Committee come to order. We have members present on this day, the ninth day of February 2012, Thursday. We have members present, Representative Costello, Representative Edgman, Representative Dugan, Co-Chair Thomas Stoltz, Vice Chair Fairclough, Representative Guerra, Representative T. Wilson, and Representative Guttenberg. Representative Jewell has been previously excused. But being so diligent, he came anyway. We have matters before us. We have House Bill 283, the capital budget. We will have the CS ready for final passage tomorrow. So if people are paying attention, this will only be the, bringing back the ghost of Mike Kelly, the 30,000-foot view of House Bill 283, the capital budget, House Bill 285, the mental health budget, and House Bill 286, the general obligation bonds for ports and infrastructures, and then closing the day, we'll have a presentation from Mr. Rayfield on the supplemental appropriations bill. Any matters to come before us? We have a item that Representative Guerra wishes to pass out. We'll we're free to distribute that as long as we're okay. It was published in I think of November of last year. If anybody wants to look it up, okay, all right. We are and Representative Newman, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're at full strength, as they say in hockey. So I'd like to begin by inviting Ms. Rayfield to come forward. You are going to be, well, I mentioned you just on the supplemental, you will be presenting all the bills.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Karen Rayfield, Director of OMB, and I will endeavor to do a very high-level but helpful overview of each one of the bills that you mentioned. I do have individuals from departments in the room. If you do have specific questions that I'm not able to answer, or certainly I know at the subcommittee level you are going through some of these in greater detail as well, so just to whatever the chair would prefer.
I'm anticipating, Ms. Rayfield, that probably the most relevant discussion in talking on the bonding bills is probably our department revenue to talk about what opportunities are, the strength of our bonding status, and why the administration feels this is the appropriate time, and the general questions, I think, the broader philosophical and business decisions you make on whether or not to bond. So, rather than the efficacy of individual projects, we'll get to that in detail at a later point. I think just the general approach, why the administration believes bonding, and I think it's probably good to have revenue augment your testimony at that time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I do have the Deputy Commissioner of Revenue here to help with that presentation. If you wouldn't mind, after we do the capital budget, if we could do the port bond bill second, that would be terrific. And
we are here to help.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'll start with House Bill 283, which is the Governor's proposed capital budget for fiscal year 2013. The capital budget before you totals $1.8 billion, all funds. This is excludes duplicated funds, so if you look at our December fiscal summary, it is on line 24. That number does include the mental health capital budget, which we will also talk about when we get to the mental health bill a couple of bills from now. In that total number, we have proposed $882 million of unrestricted general fund, $81 million of designated general funds, $20 million of other funds, and $820.5 million of federal funds.
I think we vetted this subject pretty thoroughly in the original overview on our revenues and the proposed capital budget. Representative Dugan led some of that discussion. Thank you. Please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 283 contains 14 sections. The largest, of course, is Section 1, the number section of the bill. It starts on page 2 and goes to page 42. This section of the bill totals $1,766,000.8. It's organized by department. The projects are listed in priority order. Deferred maintenance projects appear at the end of each department's list. DOT is probably the only exception to that because they're organized within their different appropriation levels. In your capital budget book, you will also have the individual, the project review listing and the backup for each of the projects requested. And I know we're not going to get into all of that today. I did highlight for you earlier this session some of the priorities that are in the capital budget. And I'm not going to run through each of those, but they are in the area of resource development. We talked about roads to resources, permitting, increasing our capacity to expedite permitting, strategic minerals assessments, digital mapping, some of those larger areas that are going to help us with our efforts to responsibly develop our natural resources. We talked about education funding. We have two schools in there off the Department of Education school construction list, totaling $61 million.
Just take a brief interruption, remind our folks from DNR that we have a pretty rigid policy of no texting in committee. We
could cost you a capital.
Karen, just because early in the session, I still have questions that I had answers to last year, but I forgot. Can you look at page 4 for a second? Just an example. The bulk fuel upgrades are listed as a $7 million allocation, but it doesn't say where the funds are coming from. Just explain to me what that means again.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Guerra, the $7 million, if you look on page 3, unfortunately, because of the page breaks, the appropriation level is showing up on line 24 of page 3. So the $7 million that you see, and it talks about federal funds, $800,000 of general funds, $800,000 of other funds, $18 million of general funds, and $25.8 million total, then these are specific allocations within that appropriation level. So we'd have to look specifically at the $7 million to, I think part of that is general fund, but I'm going to turn around and look at my group right behind me. We'll confirm that for you, but part of that is general fund. But all of those allocations within the Alaska Energy Authority appropriation rolls up to what's on page 3.
Okay, thank you.
Please proceed, Ms. Rayfield.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was speaking briefly to the education component in the capital budget, the two rural schools for construction. We also have requested your approval of just under $24 million for the first 14 projects on the department's school major maintenance list. There are the under public safety, disaster preparedness, and the interior search and rescue helicopter, things that I highlighted when I was here a couple of weeks ago. Of course, transportation infrastructure, we'll talk much more about highways, aviation, municipal water, sewer, village-safe water.
And we'll be looking for later punctuation points on which of those capital are identified with litigation and settlements and so forth.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Jewell.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, Karen. I'm going to rehash old ground so I can move forward. Last year, I believe it was a $14 million appropriation that passed the legislature for the school in Kivalina. That was vetoed. And one of the reasons that was vetoed, as I understand it, was because they didn't want to build in the existing place, that they should have a place other than the current site in which to build a school. I don't think that that school is included in this budget. My question is, has the administration been working with the community to find a transportation route out of school to the mainland where they can build a school?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Jewell, I know that there's been a lot of work with the community of Kivalina on a relocation site. I cannot tell you exactly where they are in the development of that relocation site, but I believe that at this point on the Department of Education's list, the Kivalina project is not on there, but they are working on submitting an application for next year. If they are, and it will be dependent upon timing, there are some improvements that are needed, as I understand it, to the existing building. But if they're actually going to relocate the school, then, of course, that's a full new facility, so the cost would be significantly different. So there's a lot of work happening to try to determine what's the best approach and the best timing.
And if I could follow up, Mr. Chairman, thank you. Do you know if the Department of Transportation, and I realize the road is not a Department of Education issue, it's a Department of Transportation issue. And will the Department of Transportation be working with the community on that issue?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Jewell, that would make sense to me. I cannot answer for the department. We'll have to get you that.
I might just make a suggestion. There's a $10 million road to resources in Umiak that the people close to the area that do not want, and the people in Kivalina would surely be able to use that road to find an alternative place for for the school site.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'll continue.
Yes.
The sections, I'm just going to highlight what the various sections are in the bill. Sections 2 and 3 basically summarize the funding sources in the numbers section of the bill. One is by department and one is for all fund sources. Sections 4, 5, and 6 of the bill are related to the GEO bond package that we'll talk about. It's in the capital budget for informational purposes, but just know that that's related to the GEO bond package that we'll talk about a little later. The language sections of the bill begin on page 51. Section 7 is basically your what we call the legislative budget and audit section. This gives the legislative budget and audit the authority to consider federal and other program receipts that come in after the legislature is not in session. So there are specific provisions associated with what LBNA can consider when the legislature is not in session. Section 8 is our fund capitalization section. In that, you will find the $60 million proposed for GEO reimbursements. I know we talked about that a little bit a couple of weeks ago. And then also the Emerging Energy Technology Fund, $1.7 million from federal funds into the Emerging Energy Technology Fund. Section 9, again on page 51, has two fund transfers, $25 million to the Renewable Energy Grant Fund, and then $35.5 million to the new Regional Educational Attendance Area School Fund. Section 10, Mr. Chairman, on page 51 is insurance claims, and this is our state insurance catastrophic reserve fund and allows insurance claims to be actually appropriated to state agencies to mitigate loss. And that's a pretty typical boilerplate section in your language. Section 11 has to do with the appropriation for the National Petroleum Reserve Alaska grants, estimated to be about $5.4 million. The Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development annually conducts that grant application process. We know that the department is going through that process right now, and once they have a list of grants, we will bring them before you for consideration to actually include the listing in the budget. If we have them, by the time we propose the amendments next week, we'll bring them, and if we don't, we'll talk to you about that a little later, but hopefully we'll have it to include in the 15th amendments, the amendments that will come to you on February 15th. Mr. Chairman, Section 12 of the bill is on page 52, lines 8 through 10. This has to do with fish and game. There are three pieces in this particular section. It has to do with amending a previous appropriation for the sport fish hatchery in Anchorage to include operations. It has a subsection to reappropriate $5 million of the balance from the Anchorage sport fish hatchery to the Fish and Game Fund. And it also allows would allow the Department of Fish and Game to apply any proceeds from the sale of the resolution towards purchase of equipment for a new vessel. We know the sport fish division, there were several ongoing operating funding questions with the sport fish division. They have fish and game authority in their budget. We have concerns about the cash in the fund and future revenue projections. The reappropriation of the $5 million into the fish and game fund would help us with that, at least on the short term. And I think that clearly there are several ways to accomplish this. I know Mr. Teal pointed some of those out in his review of the budget, So, and I also know that your subcommittees will be talking about it. But just know that was one of the things that, one of several problems that were brought to our attention as we were developing the budget that that we felt needed to at least have a discussion about how best to do that. So it's in the bill, and certainly I know there'll be more discussion about it at the subcommittee
level. On that point of surplus of proceeds, are we talking from the bond sales in 2007, I believe, or 2006?
Mr. Chairman, I'd have to refer to either Mr. Dell or to Mr. Brooks, who's in the room, and they could answer that for you.
My concern is that there's been some ambiguity on this one. If there is an opportunity to shorten the life of the $9 surcharge on sport fishing licenses and be consistent with the original intent of that legislation, which I oppose, I would look at any opportunity to pay off those bonds. If we benefited from financing, refinancing, and restructuring them, it shouldn't be to feed the beast at fishing game. It should be to shorten the commitment that was forced upon sport fishermen.
Mr. Chairman, we can get you that answer, or we could have someone in the room.
That's in it. Okay. I'll just be, I'm being gentle on this right now, but we'll be more forceful if there's an attempt by the department to not take advantage of an opportunity and to retire that debt sooner, because that's been sort of our mission of restructuring and retiring debt, and it should be for capital, it shouldn't be for operating expenses. Representative Newman, I think I'd probably chum the waters. You got your interest here on a hook.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think you're doing a good job. Keep it up. Commissioner, just questions on Section 11, page 52. When it talks about the $5,400,000 for the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development for capital project grants, is that money that just goes to DCCED under a basic grant program for communities applying to grants for DCCED, or is it sideboards on there as to specific to different communities and areas around the state? Or can you explain a little bit on how that's used or let out?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Newman, certainly that the funds that are available through NPRA grants come from the U.S. Interior Department, BLM, and it's from proceeds, of course, of sales, rentals, bonuses, royalties on leases issued within the NPRA. And these funds are available for grants. Entities apply for grants that are in communities that are directly impacted by the leases or development of oil and gas within the NPRA. So there's a certain number of communities who are eligible to apply for grants, and the funds can be used for planning, construction, maintenance, and operation of public facilities or other necessary public services.
But only communities that are impacted by development in the NPRA.
That's correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to let you know, in Section 12, Paragraph D, transferring the funds, general funds, to sport fishing, construction, and operations. Some of us have been around long enough to know that when the bonds were being sold, that the department, and he is now a deputy commissioner, still is, who was selling the idea, said they can absorb the operation costs of the department. And when we get to the operating budget, maybe you can show us what changed. So we have to pay for it in a different way now.
Mr. Chairman, and certainly Fish and Game will be available to talk with you about that. I think some of the concerns has been that the cash flow in and out of the Fish and Game Fund revenues have been down. And I don't think at the time they were contemplating that. But I'm sure that they will be happy to talk with you in more detail about it.
Just a quick comment back. But that's the way the operating budget and the budgets in Alaska have gone for years. You shouldn't say we've been able to absorb it when you know that the budgets go up and down, especially when we're tied to oil like we are. But he made that comment for some reason, I can't remember why. I think I was the chairman of fisheries at the time, and they said they can absorb it.
it wasn't a general obligation bond. It was a revenue bond. It didn't get ratification of voters, but I think the obligation to the voters is and the taxpayers, i.e. the folks buying the revenue, is no less implicit in my view, and whether or not Fish and Game Department believes that. This will be an issue I intend to be very vocal on. I'm not going to say bait and switch. It's all these stupid metaphors, breeding fishes. I'm certainly asked the governor to weigh in. If we have the House of Representatives has been a leader in working on retiring debt, and what a positive signal that would send to the people of Alaska that we're not playing games with funds. This didn't have the decency to go through as a general obligation bond. This was a revenue bond, and I'm often critical of those. My concern for the taxpayers on this, i.e. the users, is no less than if they'd voted on it themselves, even more so because they didn't have a choice. Ms. Ungara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Karen, I'm a step behind on the same section, the sport fishery facility upgrades and construction. Is the construction and are all the upgrades done by now?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gere, I believe that the Anchorage hatchery is completed.
So if you want leftover money to be spent on operations, that just must mean there's leftover money, right?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gere, I believe there's an estimate of $5 million that would be available.
And from what I'm hearing around the table through the chair, there's some pressure to raise fish and game license fees, which I hadn't heard about, but there's not.
It's to forego an opportunity to shorten the obligation of license payers.
All right. Okay. I just wanted to make sure. Thanks.
Should I continue?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Mr. Chairman, the next section, Section 13, basically provides for the lapse provisions of various sections that are identified as capital projects. Of course, those appropriations are made for the valid life of the project and carried forward from one year to the next. Section 14 is the effective date of the bill, which would be, of course, July 1 of 2012, which is the beginning of fiscal year 2013. So that is my high-level overview of the capital budget, Mr. Chairman. And we could move to the GEO bond.
Representative Dugan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, probably should know this, but I don't. When we're in the section on fund transfers, I'm assuming that what that means is we're moving money from the general fund into a discrete fund, and it will be expended from that discrete fund. Am I reading that correctly?
That's correct.
So what happens if all the money isn't spent?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dugan, it would remain in that fund and be available for expenditure at another time. You can put more, you could appropriate as much as you would choose to into a fund and then make appropriations from it at whatever time you feel they would need to be made.
If I might, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Dugan.
So if that fund isn't fully expended, we're just sort of banking it for the next year? Am I understanding that correctly?
Mr. Chairman, that would be correct. For the most part, when you look at the Renewable Energy Grant Fund, that is a fund that we have typically expended from on an annual basis, but it's designated once it goes into the Renewable Energy Fund. The Regional Education Attendance Area School Fund is new. It's the one, I'm not going to recall the bill number, but it passed a couple of years ago, so FY13 would be the first year of the formula that actually requires an amount that's based on the amount that we're paying in municipal debt service for school projects to go into a rural education or a regional education school fund. So this is the first year of that. We are proposing to spend this money toward the two school projects that we have included in the capital budget.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Gera.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative
Gera. Karen, can I just plant a seed here? If you look at page 6, there's $160,000 down for Arctic Power, and I don't really want to debate that. I don't know whether it's money well spent, because it seems like the House is going to pass an ANWR bill. It seems like the Senate probably won't, or the President will veto it. So I don't want to spend too much time debating that. But it's occurred to me that you know, part of our future is a gas pipeline. The governor agrees with that, and I think many of us are on the same page as the governor. And I think we want to sell it wherever we can export it to so that we can get a big line going. One of the impediments right now is shale gas in the lower 48. The forecasts are that the price of shale gas is going to go up as communities get more concerned about the impacts of shale gas. Has there been discussion in the administration about doing something like Arctic Power to advertise that Alaska natural gas is clean, doesn't pollute water aquifers, doesn't create the environmental problems that shale gas is providing, is creating a lot of local communities, to increase the chances that people will start looking at Alaska natural gas as a future energy source? Has there been discussion about that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Guerra, I believe that Commissioner Sullivan of Natural Resources has been very engaged in outreach and education efforts to try to work not only with industry but others in the lower 48 to understand the potential that we have in Alaska. And I know that from the perspective of the work that Arctic Power has done, they've also brought in to be more of an outreach and an educational arm so that others in the lower 48 understand more of what we can do in Alaska.
Thank you. Just through the chair, one follow-up.
Yeah, sure.
I guess I would just recommend that you bring to the governor that at least one member would like to see an ad campaign about how much cleaner Alaska natural gas is than shale natural gas in the lower 48, and I think that will help increase our chances of finding some market for our gas.
Very good. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman. Representative Edgman.
On the issue of Arctic Power, we heard yesterday on the House floor that one of our members went back east and did some extensive legwork on behalf of ANWR. And my first thought was to applaud her effort, but my second thought was to think, we're putting all this money into Arctic Power, and yet we've got so many congressional members unaware of, you know, these pertinent issues to Alaska. Our pipeline is a third full, and, you know, that there's broad support here in ANWR, and so I guess it's incumbent upon me maybe to learn a little more about Arctic Power, knowing that this organization has been around for a long time. At one point, I think it was funded considerably higher amount, but so it was to my chagrin to sort of get this report back that maybe we need to even double or triple our effort back east. So I'm just going to make that as an editorial comment that really struck me when I heard that on the floor yesterday.
Yeah, point, counterpoint. So something in the middle,
President. Mr. Chairman, I'll try. I think that the legwork can do some good, and I certainly hope that we don't not continue to try to open Alaska's Petroleum Reserve. I think that, as Representative Edgman said, things have been done, and things are continuing to be done, and I have my hopes set that the House, certainly Congress, will pass the ANWR resolution, certainly for the first time ever. NCSL, by a three-quarter vote, supported us to open the Petroleum Reserve, and we're going to do a full press on the Senate in the next 10 days, I hope, with the help of everyone in this room and across Alaska, to try to talk about how we do responsibly develop and care very much about our environment. So I don't know if that's in the middle, Mr. Chairman, but I don't want to assume that the Senate won't hear us, nor that the President won't sign a bill into law that the American people need at this time.
I guess I find myself agreeing with Representative Guerra, sharing my frustration that you know, the current makeup of the Senate and the presidency is probably too much of a stumbling block. I'm not sure if that's exactly what you said, but
oh, there are just some touches that I let go by.
Anyway, that was your remarks are taken.
Well, we do agree on ANWR, so
thanks. Please.
Mr. Chairman, should I move to the Geobond bill at this point?
Representative Costello.
Thank you. I'd like to offer an unrelated side dish menu of lunch options here. But my question, Karen, has to do with the runway improvements that are included in this budget. And I was wondering, statewide, if you happen to know how many of our runways are not up to FAA regulations. Or FAA standards.
Through the chair, Representative Costello, I don't have that number. We can certainly get that for you. I know DOT would have it off the top of their head. But
thank you.
I think we have an invigorated aviation division. They ought to just be listening and ready to pounce, provide that information right now. Any other questions on the capital budget? No. We'll set that bill aside for future consideration at a later date.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Bura.
Just in case I missed it, I thought it was in the operating budget supplemental. Do we have the operating budget supplemental in front of us?
Well, it's a combination of operating and capital expenses. So it's a supplemental.
Hospital 307, we will get to that. Yeah.
We're going to, that's our last, we're going through the, well, next we'll go to the general obligation bonds, reports and infrastructure, then to the mental health trust budget, and then the supplemental.
Got it. I just don't see the file in front of me. It's the big one.
All right. Next.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to invite Angela Rodell, the Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Revenue, to join me at the table.
I'd like to, maybe we can incite her to have a discussion of market conditions and opportunities for bonding, why it's a good or a bad time, and some of the past actions of retiring debt, and just kind of give us the a little bit lower elevation view of what the bonding picture and why the governor is proposing the GO bonds as a funding solution or funding approach. I think that will probably set the framework. It's really probably a more relevant discussion today than the individual projects, which will, I suspect, may expand in scope and size.
You think?
New kid. Welcome, Ms. Rodell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Angela Rodell. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Revenue, Treasury Division. The bill before you today, which Ms. Rayfield will go through in greater detail, would authorize the issuance of $350 million in general obligation debt. General obligation debt is backed by the full faith, credit, and resources of the state of Alaska. We currently have approximately $628 million in general obligation bonds outstanding. The state has the resources and capacity to take on the proposed additional debt. Currently, interest rates are at historic lows. This has allowed us to take advantage of the market and reduce our debt service obligations. In January of 2012, we sold on behalf of the state $175,560,000 of general obligation refunding bonds, with more than $26 million of that being sold to Alaskans. We used the proceeds to refund $191,410,000 of bonds that had been issued back in 2003. This transaction had an all-in true interest cost of 1.24%, and saved the state $27 million net present value. This transaction demonstrates the attractiveness of Alaska's general obligation paper and also the current low interest rate environment in the tax-exempt market. Any new debt issued will have the debt service structured to provide a low cost of funds and a level burden on future state budgets. As we move forward with this proposed legislation, we would like to work closely with you to ensure all of the projects meet the necessary tests for tax exemption and can take advantage of these low rates. In November of 2010, Moody's Investors Service raised the state's general obligation rating to AAA. This was followed by S&P raising our rating to AAA this past December. A AAA rating is the highest investment grade rating achievable and expresses an opinion of the rating agency as to the ability of the state to honor its long-term unsecured obligations and contracts. In reviewing our rating, Fitch, Moody's, and S&P will be looking to the final dollar amount issued and the overall plan of finance in conjunction with other state issues such as revenues, expenses, and other commitments such as the PERS and TERS unfunded liability. We have provided a fiscal note which assumes the voters would approve a $350 million in general obligation bonds. We are required by federal tax law to track all funds to final expenditure and to ensure that all funds are spent within 3 years of the date of issuance. In order to comply with these requirements, we assumed the bonds would be issued in three tranches, giving an opportunity for funds to be spent before additional debt was incurred. We assumed the first issuance would come in February 2013, following the November 2012 election. Debt repayment would begin in fiscal year 2014. We will need an appropriation of approximately $900,000 in our fiscal year 2013 budget in order to pay for the costs associated with the first tranche of debt. The costs associated with issuing bonds include underwriting, ratings, legal counsel, financial advisors, marketing disclosure services, administration, and printing. And for a $350 million bond program, we would expect the total cost to be around $2,965,000, or $8.50 a bond. And I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have at this time.
And either you or Ms. Rayfield, do you have a projection, assuming different interest rates, what that adds to the FY14 operating budget?
Okay.
And years onward, and for how long?
And we did assume that rates, the Federal Reserve Bank did come out with its interest rate.
All parts are okay for this latest level here.
And I just wanted to let you know that it's not expected that interest rates will rise in the near term. And so we made a conservative estimate of 4% if we didn't issue until 2014. So we raised rates slightly and assumed that they would go up somewhat because it would be 2 years before we would have the full issuance.
And the answer to?
To the question is it would be about $19 million a year in debt.
We'll round it to $20 million just for general discussion, since we're being conservative. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So are you trying to tell us that keeping our money in the bank or into investments is going to make more than 4%?
It's our hope.
Yeah.
It's better we're banking on that.
It's our expectation, through the chair, Representative Wilson, it's our expectation that our long-term investment horizon and the money that we have invested in our longer-term funds will exceed the 4% that we've assumed for the debt issuance cost.
And whichever funds those are right now, what are they currently? Last year, what did they make?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, on the general funds, we assumed we had a rate of I apologize, I didn't bring that with from yesterday's presentation, but on the general funds, we have assumed in the revenue sources book a rate of 3.2% going forward, and on the longer-term funds, 6.85%.
Okay, thank you.
And there should be in our previous packets from other presentations, but past performance doesn't predict future. Representative Guerra.
Thank you. Just following up on Representative Wilson's questions, I don't count the Constitutional Budget Reserve right now as a fund that we plan on tapping into anytime soon. So we have the Statutory Budget Reserve. What is that earning?
It's earning around 3%.
Okay. So less than what the bonds would cost us.
That's what we're assuming. We're assuming the 3.2% today. We assumed rates would go up on the bond issuance. We would assume that also the rates on the statutory budget reserve would also increase if our borrowing costs increase to 4%.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
But the statutory budget reserve has to be invested in short-term instruments because we know that we might use that more quickly than constitutional budget reserve money, right?
Correct.
And in a today we have roughly $16 billion in savings. We could pay for what we need in a bond in cash today, and if we put this money if we fund it by long-term bonds, we'll have no problem paying next year's payment or the next year's payment. 10 years from now, we don't know what our financial picture looks like. And my concern is that if revenues to the state decrease and costs keep going up, we're saddling people 10 years from now with increased annual payments of $19 million a year for a long time when the picture's cloudy, whereas we can be more responsible today and know what we can afford to spend. So how do you respond to that?
I would think, through the chair, Representative Guerra, I think you make an interesting point. The counter-argument that I would respond to is that if you spend that $350 million today, you're not going to have it in the future, and you won't have any investment earnings. So when the revenues are declining, you're not going to have the $350 million to fall back on, whereas if you issue debt, you're only going to need to come up with $19 million to pay the debt service. Once cash is spent, it's gone.
One final point,
Mr. Guerra.
I think most of us believe that 10 years from now, the state's going to be facing, unless oil production changes or prices keep going up, we're going to be facing tighter budgets. And I don't know that the statutory budget reserve is going to be as big, earning 3 or 4% interest a year. It seems like it's probably going to be much smaller. So your assumption is that statutory budget reserve is going to be there at the same size 10 years from now. That seems very unlikely to me, and it seems to me that we should protect folks 10 years down the line from long-term obligations like this. That's my instinct.
And I'll just make another comment on bonds, though. I think it's valid comments about the extending the life of our obligations, but there's something inherently fair about bonds. They have an internal discipline. You can't. It has to be fair in its construction. If you're going to get approval of the voters of Alaska, you're asking the approval of the voters of Alaska, and it's not one the governor can cherry pick out. It's an all or nothing approval. He can't. He or she can't be punitive in vetoing out certain sections. It's built in a function where it has to have equity politically, geographically, and it has to have, you can't go past a tipping point that you're going to pass the voter's tolerance. So there's some other counterbalances as well that are pretty good on bonds, and maybe even restrain spending less than we would have through other spending vehicles. But Representative Dugan and the Representative Jewell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of my quick questions here. Did I understand you to say that once that the cost of issuing the bonds was going to come out of the general fund? That is, it wasn't part of the bond itself, that it was going to be an additional charge. Did I get that right?
That is correct.
Thank you.
Right.
And I'm sorry. But if you extrapolate that, is that issuance cost the only cost that the actual taxpayer has to pay, or is there are there continuing costs for that?
Through the chair, Representative Dugan, those are the only costs other than principal and interest repayment, obviously, but and those costs are then amortized over the over the life of the debt.
Great. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, one more question.
Representative Dugan.
Thank you. And what is the sort of total cost of the bonds that we have out there now?
You mean in terms of... Through the chair, Representative Dugan, in terms of total cost that we'll pay back, because we have $628 million in principal outstanding, so I guess I'm asking for some clarification.
This is only general obligation.
Yeah, this is just general obligation.
Not right. Revenue bonds or securitized.
And are you asking what the total cost will be to the state to repay that $628 million?
Just what it would be. What is it? I understand that we're paying off the bonds as we go, but right now, what would it be?
Unfortunately, sir, I don't have that number, but I can get that number for you.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I'll just note that we're now talking about $350 million, a number that is, no offense to anybody at this table, but is pretty likely to go up. And if our total indebtedness right now from these bonds is, you know, whatever it is, $670 million, we're talking about... adding 50%, I guess that's how those numbers would work to our debt total. Am I getting that right?
Correct.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Jewell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You're kind of like the capital budget. The governor puts a bill out there with the understanding that there's going to be an interest because there are needs all over the state. And then we end up negotiating at a level or knowing a level of what the upper tolerance is. So with regards to this bond package, how high are we willing to go and know that the legislature is going to have an interest both at this, in this body and the other?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Jewell, I had the opportunity to be in the room with the Municipal League earlier today, and the governor was asked a question about the GO bonds, and I think he recognizes that there will be some increase in, because there are other projects that people are talking about. He indicated that he expected there's somewhere between 50 and 75 million of room, but I think there's also some sensitivity to what the voters might ultimately be comfortable with approving. So I did hear him talk about that today.
Just kind of with a smile on my face, because I've heard this done and referred to, I don't know if it's been so much by this body, but another body in the building, where we talk about one-third, 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 and I'm saying, boy, if that's the starting point of one-third, 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 it's like, oh, boy.
And there is, folks, there is a fiscal note in the packet that has the fiscal impacts and a narrative describing the sales schedule and some of the scenarios. So, who had their hand? Representative Edgman, I believe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got one project in here from my district that I'm pretty familiar with, and there's a couple others that I'm somewhat familiar with, but just the statement that all funds must be spent within 3 years of issuance was... was this bond package directed towards, sort of quote unquote, the shovel ready projects that were out there in terms of projects that were up and going?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Edgman, I think if you look at the individual projects, they're all in various stages. Some are probably more shovel ready in certain phases than others. The timing, of course, of when they sell the bonds would depend on where the projects are. I think it's important to point out that as requested in the GO bond before you, I am not aware that any of these projects would be fully funded for specific phases, but certainly it would be important for them to be able to move forward and work with some other financing options for the remainder of the project. So these aren't designed to be full funding for any of the projects, as I understand it.
Representative Thomas.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Karen, that last comment kind of had two communities that came to me. So we have $1 million, we need 1.8. We have 1.8, we need 2 million because some other organizations gave her money. If the legislature gives you this money, we'll match it. This is what this looks like, because I read a letter in here from the mayor of Monick. You give them $10 million, they're going to be $6 million shy yet anyway, and they're going to come back here the following year looking for the other $6 million. So some of these smaller projects, and I don't even know where the CDQ, what the dock will cost. If it was $18 million, they're still going to come back here, and if what the deputy commissioner was saying it's cheaper to use bond money, why don't we fully fund them than waste general fund money in a year or two out? Makes sense to me that we fully fund these projects, not knowing, again, Karen, that Mr. Rayfield, what the total costs are, like the Ward Cove dock. I imagine that's a marine highway storing dock. I mean, I've not seen a dock built in Southeast for $10 million. They're just going to come back and get another $20 million. I'd rather, if we're going to do a bond, pay for it, then that leaves general fund money available for other projects.
Mr. Chairman, point well taken. There are a number of things, I think, as you get into hearing from the individual projects about what other financing options, you'll hear that some of them are working with ADA. There may be some opportunities there for other funding. So they're not every project, of course, has its own story and its own opportunity, but I'm sure you'll hear more about that when you bring the folks before the committee.
You know, Ms. Rayfield, I want to keep it to the broader discussions. We probably don't even need to get into talking about the projects within. It's I need to have discussions with the other co-chairs on, you know, on anticipated levels of what the minimums and maximums and schedule who's going to send the bill over. And we've got a lot of the important details. And hope this is one you have to have agreement on collectively if you don't want to reach a tipping point. Frankly, bonding might not have been my first choice, but the mayors within the adjoining areas, they worked with the governor. They didn't have a lot of requests for my input, but I would have might have suggested different strategies, but the local officials have plotted a course with the chief executive, and if they think that ship will float, then we'll see. I mean, it may have been better ways. I'm not sure. Sometimes I hate giving people the full amount of money ahead of time. It gets their feet up on the desk instead of worrying about justifying costs at every step. Or, you know, there are up and down sides. Port of Anchorage, for example, they're probably never going to get. You can argue about the scope of the size, but they're probably not going to get where they need to go at $30 million a year or $20 million a year. That's probably prompted part of that. Whereas another big project that's in there is a rail extension. You know, they might be concerned that instead of getting cash each year on an incremental basis, as they instead, even if they're successful in a bond package, they might not have any. They won't have any money this year. You lose a construction season. There's all kinds of variables in this. But again, our local leaders set a course, and they're the ones that launched this ship with the governor. And again, I'm later to the party than some other participants. So we will deal with the issue as a policy matter that's presented in the budget. And obviously, if we abandon it, that sure changes the dynamics of how we construct a capital budget, because it leaves a lot of big holes that are now there. I mean, it creates some big holes and money being spent. So those are actually the more important questions rather than, you know, which projects are on the list right now. And those will be evolving in discussion.
Mr. Chairman, absolutely, and I think that the governor was really putting this forward because this is important discussion to have. Wanted to work with you on developing the infrastructure that's really important along our coastline. So I think these are all good conversations. So, Mr. Chairman, I think that we've covered pretty much. The bill is a very simple bill. I don't, in terms of the structure of it and the sections.
You have two simple bills here, Trent.
Sorry.
Are there any Representative Fairclough?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the larger picture, can you give me some context of the $627 million, is that what it was, for current GO bonds that are issued? I see that the $100 million would be a payment of about $19 million going forward in debt service. But how much debt has Alaska typically had on bonds? Because I know for the time that I've served in the legislature, we've been trying, as the co-chairs have indicated, to pay down debt. So is the $627 million an average? Is that below average? I mean, what is the context or the realm in which we function in this particular market with GO bonds? Maybe a 10-year cycle, if you can give me 10 years or 5 years back.
Through the chair, Representative Fairclough, I think that, you know, the state had a history of not issuing any GO debt for a long period of time. And then starting around 2003.
We had bonds in 2002, education and transportation bonds. In 2008, we had transportation bonds. And last year, we had $397.2 million in education bonds.
And there's $197 million of authorized but unissued debt that the voters have approved for education. And at this time, we'll look at when to issue that debt, but we need the Department of Education to make sure that they've spent and that they're prepared to spend that money in the three-year time frame required so that we don't have money's on deposit that we can't invest out long or put into projects. So in terms of historically, I think the $628 million is probably more than the state has had on its books than in recent history, given that the state had a long period of not issuing any debt and not having any debt on its books at all.
general obligation debt.
General obligation debt.
We had plenty of securitized loans and revenue bonds, and this has been a front door through the people approach in the last three elections, which is, in my view, the preferred approach. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Sherman, if I might follow up. That said, we just had an increase in our credit rating by the second organization, Standard & Poor, to the AAA. And so, you know, referring to your fiscal note, we had some conversation about the potential of making money by borrowing money, per se, arbitrage. We think we can get a blended rate of 2.35 on the debt for $350 million, and we think that the Constitutional Budget Reserve is currently yielding us 3.4%, and the CBR is currently, at least according to the fiscal note, 6.85, and so that would be a net gain to Alaskans. So with that in mind, how much debt, and Representative Jewell alluded to that, you know, this is sort of the starting board for us at, if the governor's thrown out $350 million and we know that small communities may not be able to come up with the matching money that the administration may like to draw to this particular bond sale, and individual legislators start advocating for individual projects that we don't want to discuss today, and that number goes up, and we have some sensitivity that's been discussed here today at $425 million to $400 million or some kind of curve in there. Legislature certainly will do what the legislature does, and that's appropriate. How will the bond market look at that fiscal structure, and where is their sensitivity in that, knowing what our income looks like in round numbers at $16 billion per year, at least last year, and pretty consistently, though we've got a decline in production that has been offset by that the high value of the actual production.
Through the chair, Representative Fairclough, the rating agencies are not going to put a hard cap on the amount of debt that we issue. What they're really going to be concerned about is what is our plan to repay that debt. And the state of Alaska has traditionally structured its debt very conservatively. We don't issue 30, 40, 50-year debt. We try to keep it at 20 years or less. To the extent that we can actively manage and take advantage of the current market like we did with this current refunding, we were able to front-load a lot of the debt, keep our debt service in the near term constant, and basically offer relief in 2022, 23, 24 by over $10 million per fiscal year in those out years. I think they will be looking to see what all of our obligations are, so not just our general obligation debt, but all the financial obligations that the state has, including our unfunded liability in PERS and TERS. And they will also be looking to the steps that we are taking to manage those obligations, to increase revenues, or to hold budgets back in declining revenue years. And the state has a very good history and has a demonstrated history of pulling back when oil prices have declined precipitously, and showing that you do have the fiscal restraint necessary when revenues are not meeting the expectations.
Mr. Chairman, if I might.
Representative Fairclough.
And that was actually my next point was going to be, are we including the PERS, TERS, a liability of $11 billion in round numbers? And if they're looking at that, the sensitivity on this. So from what I'm hearing, we're okay to move inside of that particular range right now, and that we would still be able to maintain with both Moody and Standard & Poor's a AAA rating and go forward into the future carrying that debt without too much burden on the current operating budget. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And I suspect, Ms. Rayfield, the governor won't be reticent about sharing some of his views about what he views as an appropriate cap. I mean, and that's just his subjective view, for what it's worth. Thank you. That was a smile as an acquiesce. I don't know.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I'm not going to. I'm sure the governor would be willing to discuss that with you.
Okay. Well, any other questions on overall bonding philosophy? We will set that bill aside for further consideration action at a later date. Mental health, you want to stay for that one?
Sure. That's
that should be a pretty quick one. It's, I just want a formality of going through and putting it on the record and with intention to hear it later.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The mental health budget, House Bill 285, and it is incorporated in all of the budget books and the work that the subcommittee is doing, both the operating and the capital side. But it is a separate bill, and it's a collaborative effort. It is between all the mental health trust beneficiary groups, mental health trusts, state agencies. It includes administration, corrections, education and early development, health and social services, labor and workforce development, natural resources, revenue, the university, and the court system. So it's a very comprehensive look at programs and services for mental health trust beneficiaries. The total budget is $249,376,500. Operating piece of that bill is $236.5 million, and the capital is just $12.9 million. Unrestricted GF is $212.4 million. Designated general funds of $20.1 million. Other funds of $16.8 million. As you know, mental health trust settlement income accounts funds are zero-based. So it's a little bit different when you look at their budget. All the trust operating funds from the current year are reversed and then built back in depending on how their recommendations come to us. They budget on a two-year cycle. So it is a little bit different, and what we prepare for you every year and you should have in your packet is a letter that talks about and captures the mental health trust recommendations and then matches up to what the governor has included in the budget.
I think we had a pretty lively discussion about the mental health, the separate aspect of that and the moral and legal commitments and our hands-off, tamper-proof status of that budget.
Okay. Mr. Chairman?
I think everybody understood that from their presentation.
Okay. And if you'd like, Mr. Chairman, maybe we should go to the supplemental.
Well, I will move which bill number was that? House Bill 285 will be set aside for further discussion and consideration at a later date. Now, to the supplemental.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
House Bill 307.
House Bill 307, the fiscal year 2012 proposed supplemental bill. I'm trying to get situated here. As I understand it, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to do just a highlight, and then we're going to try to go through. There's a 10-page spreadsheet that contains all of the supplemental items before you. What I hope to do is just highlight on each page a couple of things that may be significant or unusual compared to what you might normally see in the budget. So I'll try to highlight those for you. Certainly, if you have specific questions about anything, please ask, and I will try to answer. But it might be the most expeditious way to try to walk through what we have in front of us right now.
Just, if I will, you see a little low on your front says backup page, and as the numbers going down, you go to the next index, it'll have page one, correlates with page one of the, you have your packets with you. The front one says, yep. And on the left-hand corner, or the side says page one, it goes down to nine. If you go down to the next tab in your packet, it shows what the changes are, and it's a backup. So you go down one more tab, and you'll see that. That'll explain what the amendment number one is. And you go page two, page three, all the way down.
So, Mr. Chairman, this is the spreadsheet you have, right?
Yes, but we just put numbers on the left-hand side. So then it goes to your backup. So if people have any questions on that, they can.
Okay. And what I'll do then is just try to highlight the ones, the line that I'm on the page, and then we can talk about those and if there's something else.
You can hit the high notes on a couple of them on the for page one, and then we'll have questions.
Thank you.
We'll already have one on one.
Just for some context, Mr. Chairman, the total supplemental budget is $97.2 million. Of that, $78.5 million is unrestricted general fund. there's actually a negative in designated GF of $2.4 million, other funds of $4.8 million, and federal funds of $16.3 million. Within the whole supplemental request in front of you, agency operations totals $38.9 million, of which $30.4 is GF. This includes your fire suppression at $4.9 million, disaster relief at $3 million, and a formula-driven program, adult public assistance, is in there at $2.6 million. Capital supplementals, you know, for the emergency repairs and projects that would be ready to go to bid this summer, totals $20.4 million, of which $10.1 is general fund. And then there are two significant settlements that are requested in the supplemental bill, one relating to the optional retirement program at the University of Alaska. It's a $20 million settlement that was reached with the Department of Law, and an $18 million settlement in the Moore case with the Department of Education. So those are significant, totaling $38 million, of course, for the two settlements. House Bill 307 has 18 sections, but rather than go through those, I'll flip to the spreadsheet and we'll just start working down it, and I'll try to be as succinct as possible. Mr. Chairman, on page 1, I've highlighted lines 4, 5, 6, and 7. These are all items in the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. And they're in our division, or our component, corporations, businesses, and professional licensing. I believe you are all aware that there have been some challenges with that particular program having to do with the fee structure for professional licensing, having to do with some audit concerns of how the division has charged various programs for certain indirect and other activities, and trying to get that all in alignment going forward. It's been several years that they've tried to go back and capture what some of the problems have been. The largest item is on line 6, and what the proposal is under the, unfortunately, for a number of years, the professional licensing boards were overcharged for certain fees, certain indirect costs that should have been charged to business licensing. The effect of that was that as those professional licensing boards' fees are supposed to be self-supporting, as those charges were incorrectly tagged to those boards, those fees had to go up. What we're trying to do in this supplemental is replace that with general fund on a one-time that will allow professional licensing fees to carry forward into the next year, which will help them smooth those cost increases over time. So that's the largest component of this particular request in the supplemental bill, but I think it's probably the one that you have heard the most about. Some of the other ones are related to specific indirect charges and charges having to do with support for professional licensing boards. I suspect that at the subcommittee level you're going to spend considerable amount of time talking with the agency about what they have put in place to address these concerns and how to straighten that out in the future, but the request is designed to move those professional license fees carry forward so we can minimize the impact on the fee structure for those licensing boards.
Mr. Chair? I have a question first, Representative Garrett. On page 1, section 2, you know, the admin on the public defender's issue. You had $125,000 in the backup on, if you look at page 2 on the next tab, and you look at the change record detail with description, and you go down in the middle, the comments are a one-time $125,000 for Kotzebue new lease remodel. I mean, it seemed like you would have known about this last year. It would have been a capital, or we should have known previously, and you're coming back in with somebody decided to remodel in the middle of the year, you know, rather than and then another $50,000 for other anticipated but unbudgeted maintenance. And so, and these are things when the subcommittee chairs go through, you can read the backup and see what they're doing, because some of that, you may not want to fund. You should have added last year's But yes, just maybe, well, that's what the supplemental's for. But when you're planning to do maintenance, somebody should have known that it was scheduled.
Mr. Chairman, absolutely. And one of the, if anything, in the last several years, I think we've tried really hard to not budget, considering that we would receive a supplemental. I have to say that OpenPD, as long as I have been in this particular position, have been the most, probably one of the most difficult budgets, because we've not really been able to address the ever-increasing caseload in a reasonable way through the budget. And what we've done typically is, in the supplemental process, we've looked at this and thought, okay, there's these costs that need to be addressed, so what do we need to do in the 13 budget? This is one you'll see in the 13 budget amendments that I bring before you next week. It's not the preferred way to budget for, so I appreciate what you're saying, and I think that the department and the subcommittee needs to spend some time, you know, working through that. I know Commissioner Hultberg has been very concerned about these two budgets, and, you know, because we do have a real service that needs to be provided and increasing caseloads and trying to address that in an appropriate way. So,
and the only reason I pointed out is I did admin for 4 years, and so if anything, it's one budget I would know. And then unbudgeted computers, should say computers replacement? I mean, once you put $45,000, I want to get in the computer business and sell some. So, you know, and again, I don't know how you have an unbudgeted computer. Lots of, you know, you must have a bunch of them laying around this state here. I mean, little things, you know. I guess we call it truth in budgeting and asking. You know, somebody must have knew their computer was going bad. I mean, if mine goes bad, I call and they bring another one in here, but they must have some that's laying around without having to replace the whole system. So, and I know that you have issues.
You'll need to be able to describe that
to the subcommittee. I just wanted to point it out that that's the reason we have the backup in here, so the subcommittee chairman can look at their amendments that they're going to bring to you, and it's up to you whether you want to take them or not. So,
we'll get a bus.
Attaboy. You're on the A team here. Okay, let's go to page two. Oh, wait, excuse me, Representative Fickler, if you had a question. Oh, we'll Representative Guerra, excuse me.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Karen, in section one of the Black Book on page four, that corresponds with line four on page one, there's a $244,000 increase for support for boards and commission members. It seems to be, from my guess, travel, but I'm not sure. But that's roughly a 75 or 80% increase over the money that we appropriated to them last year. So this is one of the ones that jumps out at me as a huge percentage increase. Why?
Mr. Chairman, the department can probably give you a better answer than I can, but I'll take a stab at it. What we've learned, and I believe that some of you have heard about this as well, is that these professional licensing boards, basically, they are supposed to be self-supporting. So they're basically paying for the regulation of their profession. The volunteer board members participate and want to make sure that they're doing the correct thing for their membership and making sure they're current with whatever the requirements are for the medical profession, architects, engineers, whatever. Because of some of the challenges that the division has had with their accounting between business licensing, corporations, and professional licensing, they really have not been able to accurately track those expenditures to the right boards. Boards have been complaining that, you know, we're paying for this, you know, we're paying to license ourselves. We want our members to be able to participate in training to keep current with the latest whatever is happening in their particular profession. So I believe that what we're trying to do in the supplemental and also in the FY13 budget that's before you already is to try to correct this through the fees that the boards are paying. So you'll see this, the designated general fund are really the licensing fees that are coming from the licensed professions. So hopefully that helped, and if not, I'm sure that we could have someone from the department, of course, if the chair would like that to come up and explain, or we could work through it with the subcommittee.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to flag it, and if it turns out this is money that the professions are putting in and just getting back, that's fine. But if it's additional money, then I'm concerned.
We'll let the chairman know over there.
So
Representative, huh?
Excuse me. I said so noted.
Okay. Representative Jewell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page one, line nine, I have a little bit of an interest here. And when I looked on the corresponding page nine in the backup, I couldn't see how that $600,000 was broken out over the 15 community jails, and I was wondering if I could get that information. But mostly, you know, I'm sure you're familiar with this issue where we brought this issue forward at for the Kotzebue Community Jail at $190,000 going through the whole budgeting process last year, which was the administration's position. As after the budget was done, you can, within a line item, which at community jails are a line item, you can move money around within that process. And the Kotzebue Jail was shorted by about $125,000 or thereabouts. And so I guess the question that I have in this $600,000, are we trying, going, is there money to cover some of that for that Kotzebue Jail?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Jewell, I believe that there is a piece in here that's specific to the Kotzebue Jail. I know that the Department of Corrections is meeting with them, if they didn't meet with them yesterday, today, about reopening. And some of this would help with that, with their reopening for the next year. We're also, of course, looking at this for our amended budget as well. Part of the issue has been, again, that looking back at how community jails are funded, there's a real distinct difference between what certain jails are charging and what other jails are charging. So what the department has been working on with some of the recommendations from legislative audit is coming up with a more blended rate for a per bed rate that could be adjusted for the location to come up with a way to really allocate the funding so that we don't get into the situation that unfortunately occurred when Kotzebue closed. So I think they're making every effort to try to straighten this out and get the funding so that the Kotzebue Jail can be reopened.
Okay. Page two.
Mr. Chairman, I had highlighted a couple of things on page two.
I have a question, Representative Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, I just was wondering, in the backup it said that the jail, Kotzebue Jail, was scheduled to open on February 1st with this particular, I think it's $125,000 that was used to remodel another $45,000 for some unexpected replacement cost that was referred to earlier on computers. Did the jail open? Is it back up and running? Or?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Fairclough, I do not believe it's reopened. They met, they actually are meeting with Kotzebue or have met with Kotzebue in the last couple of days and are working hard to make that happen, but they did not reopen on the 1st.
And then somewhere in here I thought I saw another $75,000 for Kotzebue that is going to start charging us for dispatch service. Is that right?
That, Mr. Chairman, Representative Fairclough, that's in the Department of Public Safety and it's not related specifically to this issue. It's just their costs that they provide that service for the Department of Public Safety.
Mr. Chairman, they had been providing that in a matching way, and they're going to charge us for that now.
Thank you. Perhaps I should, we'll get to it, but I should say we were on the topic that there is a request under public safety for transportation during the time that the Kotzebue Jail was closed. So that's another thing.
Okay, page two.
Mr. Chairman, on the top, on line 10 of page 2, we have a request for $1 million in the Department of Education and Early Development. This is for their contract cost increases for our assessment system. We had included an increase in the FY13 budget. This is for our the standards-based assessments that we give in the various grade levels.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My understanding is this is not an increase. Is they forgot to put the amounts in for a year or two, and this is kind of making up for that error. Maybe that's incorrect. I'd like to find out if this is a new contract and these are the new amounts or whether or not this is for past years.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson, I don't believe it's a new contract. I believe it's contract increases with their existing, but the department would be the better person to answer that question.
And you will have them.
Well, they did answer it in a different way you did. That's why I'm trying to figure out which one has the correct information.
Okay. Well, we can, Mr. Chairman, Representative, we can talk more about that.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Also on page 2, I flagged on line 14 the adult public assistance caseload growth, $2.6 million. We have included that in the governor's budget that's before you already. Also on line 15 and 16, low-income heating assistance program. We, as you know, we had contingency language in the current year budget. We also have contingency language in the 13 budget. We have increased projected needs in both programs, the state program, the tribal program, and we're putting that forward for your consideration.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Edgman.
Yeah, I want to try to get a better understanding of, if I could, Karen, is this to meet increased caseload demand and expected shortfalls on the federal side, or is this both?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Edgman, this is based on, as I understand it, increased demand. We did also have contingency language in having to do with the amount of federal funding that we received or did not receive. We did, I think the department has, and I think it's included in the backup, does know what their federal award is. So what this particular item is designed for is to fill the shortfall in the projection for the rest of the fiscal year. I do expect that we may get some updated numbers on this as winter progresses, but for now this was the best number we had to put in the supplemental bill on the 15th day. Mr. Chairman, on page 3, if I can continue. Okay. Page 3, line 23, Department of Law. This is a request for $3,116,000 for outside, for oil and gas outside counsel. We have also included an increase in the FY13 budget that is before you currently, based on the work having to do with their various tax cases, tariff proceedings, and oil and gas royalty issues. This is a kind of a standard discussion that we have, but it's in the supplemental bill before you. Also on line 25, recently we all became aware of the issues with potential base realignment. The governor's requesting your support for $300,000 to Military and Veterans Affairs to work on, you know, furthering our discussion at the national level about the importance of military in Alaska, both for the nation and for our own strategic defense. So that's included.
I have a quick comment in regards to that. Recently, the Senate just moved a resolution, opposing the closure of the bases. And whether it was intentional or unintentional by the sponsor, they forgot about the Coast Guard bases. The Coast Guard bases are also known, at least to rural Alaska, as military bases, and they're very important to Ketchikan, Sitka, Juneau, Cordova, Kodiak. And I want to make sure that when we talk military bases, that we are talking about the Coast Guard bases also. They are part of the military. And the resolution that was passed from the Senate just recently, which is in the House and will correct, didn't reflect the Coast Guard stations, and as they expand up the coast, it would be very important to Northwest Alaska, too. So I just want to let the committee know they are revered and regarded in rural Alaska as military units.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Gary.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you go back to page 3, line 23, the $3 million outside council appropriation?
Yes, sir.
Karen, I say this every year. We spend a lot of money on outside counsel. Outside counsel charge anywhere from $200 to $600 an hour for their work. We always know that we're going to be hiring outside counsel. It's cheaper to hire folks in-house to do a lot of the stuff like research memos and briefing. Maybe we need a crack trial attorney that we need to pay for at some point, but Every year this happens. There's a huge amount of money going to outside counsel, and it would be cheaper to hire folks in-state. I know it's taboo to say we should hire more state employees, but it's cheaper. So why would it not be smarter to have the inside counsel to deal with cases like this, at least to cut the amount of money of hourly fees we have to pay to private attorneys?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Guerra, I guess like so many things, it's a balance. I think we have some really excellent attorneys in this particular area that are doing great work. They also need assistance on some of these larger cases. It's possible that some of the work could be done by a line attorney if we were willing to bring on additional employees. At this point, that's not the approach that we have taken. These are large cases that may, you know, in some other areas it might work better than what we have here, but these are large ongoing cases. They're very important, and the Department of Law can speak much more eloquently about the need for this than I can, but it's been on our list on an annual basis to try to get in the actual operating budget from one year to the next, but we usually come back and ask for a supplemental to try to cover this.
Mr. Chair, just a follow-up. Thank you. Karen, I worked on one of the bigger cases we've had, the Exxon Valdez case, and back then we were doing the same thing. We were hiring outside counsel to do research memos that we should have been doing in-house. We were hiring outside counsel to file briefs on issues that we could have done in-house. There are times when you really need a great trial attorney. There are times when you need a little extra help, but I think what's always gone on in the state under Democratic and Republican administrations is we like to keep the employee counts down to say we've kept the employee counts down, but it costs us more money. And this has something like this has shown up every single year since I've been in the legislature, and it costs us more money just so we can say we hired fewer state employees. I just don't think it's the right approach.
One of the comments that was made through my years of being here was that sometimes the attorneys leave the AG's office, and he's been on a case for 8 or 10 years, and he's the only one that's maybe aware of it or very knowledgeable, and they have to hire him when he goes into private practice. So whether that's still something that they do, it's understandable if you use that comment, but that's what I was told a couple of times. On big cases, you have to retain the attorney has the knowledge, and if he leaves the state, you know, you go to private practice, whether you're retired or what. Anyway, moving right along.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry, I kind of lost
my place. Where we're at. Page 4, I think.
Page 4, thank you. Page 4, the one that I just flagged, I think you're all familiar with it. Line 35 is our fire suppression activity. It's our estimate of the need for the rest of this season. As you know, later on in the bill, you'll see a ratification for the prior year, because we can never really predict what the fire season is going to look like. So this is our best estimate at this point in time.
Okay.
On page 5, there's an item on line 38 I'd like to flag for you, and this has to do with the Department of Public Safety and the trooper detachments. And hopefully I can do a good job of explaining this one. The past several years, the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities has received federal highway safety funds that they have basically, through a real reimbursable services agreement, sent that over to public safety for troopers on the highway for DUI enforcement. There's been a real review of some of the activities and whether or not non-DUI related enforcement can be conducted under that grant. So, and in compounding that is that the amount of funds that can be used for DUI enforcement are going down. So there's a kind of a combination of things going on in this grant. What we're proposing in this supplemental is because of the reduction in the pass-through funds from DOT's Highway Safety Office for DUI enforcement, we would propose to use general fund in the trooper detachment to continue that effort. We are also looking at an FY13 budget amendment, because clearly we weren't considering that when we rolled out the December budget or what that impact might look like. And then looking forward, the DOT is going to continue to get highway safety
funds, but the amount of funds specifically related to DUI will be less. So there are just a number of things that we're going to have to continue to look at. These are important efforts, of course, in our highway safety corridors to have our patrols out there and doing the both DUI-related and non-DUI-related enforcement on those safety corridors. So that's a big item, and I just wanted to flag that one for you.
Mr. Chairman.
I got three. Representative Dugan.
If I say this wrong, correct me, but my understanding then is that there was a bunch of money here that was put in by the feds to do certain things. They're not now going to pay for that, and we're supposed to pay for it with general funds. Am I getting that correctly?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dugan, yes, if we want to continue to do that work, we would not be able to utilize that particular highway safety grant for the activities that the trooper had been doing.
Right. Well, my obvious, excuse me, Mr. Chairman, my obvious follow-up question is what sort of an evaluation has been made about whether these should be continued or allowed to lapse? Because, you know, I don't know what everybody else's experience is, but I get the feeling that these things are coming at me from every direction now, which is essentially feds used to pay for it, now they want, don't, let's put it, you know, let's put money in the state budget.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dugan, absolutely, those are the kinds of considerations that we are, the issues that are brought forward to our office quite regularly, and not all of them come here, but for the most part, the ones that we believe are important ongoing work, we should bring them forward for your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Before we leave public safety and move on to transportation, item one on this page, I just wanted to make the connection of the community jails to the transport of prisoners. And I'm not sure what period of time we're looking at this $106,000 expenditure. And we're not done with the year yet. And were there expenses before this, and this is just some of it, I guess. And then on top of that, because of a breakdown in relationship, the prior, on the bottom of the last page of the $75,000, what is this really ending up going to cost us? And an item that we could have had and saved ourselves a bunch of money rather than quibble over costs. In addition to that, the stories that I'm getting back are you can only arrest people on weekdays from the village. You can't arrest them on weekends. You have to coordinate with flight schedules because there's no jets. And so all of a sudden, this created a Pandora's box because many of those communities do not have holding facilities. And I think we're beginning to realize what a good deal we've had. And maybe this has been a lesson in that once you tip a domino, it has impacts. And I just want to raise that because I know we're trying to strike a deal with the community. But we're beginning to see that sometimes we had a pretty good deal. When the administration came forward with the amount, that was an agreement, as I take it, on both sides that somehow got weirded up, and I hope we're able to settle this and not haggle too much because we can see all of a sudden other dominoes come into play.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Jewell, I agree, and I think that I really understand that progress has been made, and so we're hoping for a good outcome there.
Representative Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, I had a question regarding transportation. Is that all right? It's on the same page, 5 at the bottom.
Maybe I'll make my one comment before. It's because it's on public safety. It seems to me that we introduced the seatbelt law because the feds are going to pay for it. Now we're not going to get paid for it. Do we repeal the seatbelt law? I mean, that was a big thing around here several years ago. Feds are going to pay for it. We don't need to pay for it. We'll enforce it. We get paid for it. Now it looks like they're backing out.
Mr. Chairman, I I don't believe that this particular issue is related to seatbelt enforcement. I think that other DOT receives several different types of highway safety funds, and this is just one piece of the highway safety funds that are used for the DUI enforcement. So the other issue on seatbelt law, I think, is attached to a different federal funding, highway safety funding stream, but I'm sure the department can give you better information on that.
A little bit here, a little bit there. Okay. Yeah. Pretty soon, yeah. A billion here or there. Okay. Representative Clough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We've had some pretty awful weather in Anchorage, in Eagle River, over the last 24 hours, and I've had calls into my office that I had community members sitting for 7 hours on Eagle River Road based on Highland Road being closed. And so I'm concerned at the level that we have currently in the supplemental to address the needs on the highway system. I know that Representative Dugan raised issues of concern as far as alligator or whatever that rough ice is when we can't get it off in a speedy manner based on the weather conditions. So I just, one, wonder whether we have enough, and two, we'll follow up with the public safety to see if there were any kind of accidents or hazards that happened while certainly my residents were forced to sit on the side of the road. And my concern is that, you know, if we would have had a heart attack or anything, no one could get to them. They were stranded. Actually, the gal who worked in my office last year called this morning, and she was sitting on the highway for 7 hours. And so I know that there must have been big emergencies going on elsewhere to draw other police officers somewhere else, and the icing was horrible. But just trying to follow up to understand your needs in how we might respond. The team at DOT has been trying in Central Region to stay in front of it. I understand that. The weather is just beaten up on us this year. And so, Mr. Chairman, just on to this issue, I see a couple $100,000 appropriations into the Central Regions, one for sanding and one for additional snow removal. But I've got to question whether that's enough when we're still experiencing it as early as yesterday.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clough, excellent point. As you know, we put the supplemental bill before you on the 15th day of session, and there are several things that we know. Disaster relief is going to be one. Winter is continuing. We know that in Fairbanks a couple of years ago with all the ice storms, DOT is going to do what they need to do to protect the safety of the transportation community. So I expect, even though we try very hard to minimize the number of amendments that we bring to you, we expect that we're going to have to refine these numbers while you're still in session, and so and we'll do that and try to do it as expeditiously as possible.
Representative Newman.
Mr. Chair, Kara, as we go through here, and I've kind of been looking along, I'm concerned, like in number 38. Again, it's items like this that seem to be almost embedded into the budget as they tend to move along. You know, with the lack of federal funds, we're going to be seeing that more. And I know that our chairs are working on that. Or other ERA funds, you know, a little $100,000 here, $100,000 there. Is there a way to identify those funds are not coming, or, you know, if we're backfilling them with general fund monies?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Newman, what we try to do is, of course, work with our departments to identify what they know looking forward. Typically, we don't have a good crystal ball on when, or we anticipate that there may be some reductions. We don't know how much, and we don't know the timing generally until we get into it, and then all of a sudden you're there. What we're looking at now, the co-chair has requested a look back on those things that we can identify as federal funds going away and where we've replaced general fund dollars. So we're trying to put that together for you in conjunction with some work that the co-chairs are doing. But really, you know, we're all kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop in terms of when some of these major reductions are going to occur. And it's not even those funds that federal funds that have come directly to the state, but also federal funds that have gone to other institutions or organizations or communities directly in Alaska that are seeing reductions in federal funds, because you know there will be pressure for the state to come in and take a look at that and whether or not we should be continuing. So it's going to be a bigger conversation, I think, than we've had in the past when we bring the budgets forward to you. But it's a little bit of an issue like public safety on the DUI enforcement. It starts with, you know, just a federal change. We see that in military and veterans affairs. They change the matching ratios. So you'll see some little changes due to the matching ratios. Here they're changing the way that grant has been structured, so there'll be changes in what we can, our allowable costs or not allowable costs. So those are things we're going to have to grapple with every year. I don't know if that's a good answer, but it's...
Mr. Chair, Commissioner, that's exactly what I'm trying to get to is, you know, under the direction of Co-Chair Thomas of looking at a 10-year forward plan, and what do we see that we're not going to be getting funding on? You know, and these long-term things that have been coming from the federal government almost get embedded into the operating budget because of that. And you know, we're receiving federal funds one times at a time. And I think you really hit the nail on the head when you talked about funds that are going to municipalities or special groups that work with adults, seniors, or whatever. There's plenty of programs out there. And they're going to get less and less funds, you know. And that's, we're going to get overloaded with that pretty quick here, I think. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Next page.
Mr. Chairman, on page 6, what I did want to flag is on line 50 here. It goes back to a little bit of what we were just talking about for the Anchorage International Airport de-icing chemicals. We also have this particular request, $1.6 million in the FY13 governor's budget. And then on line 52 is the increased federal authorization for the University of Alaska for Pell Grants. So that's a federal thing, and you'll see that. We're discussing that for the amended budget for next week. Then turning to capital items, as I mentioned earlier, there are a few capital items emergency in nature, or for those items that could go to bid this summer if we can move the authority up. The first item I'd like to flag is on line 55. This is an emergency project that the Department of Corrections undertook last fall. They had overcrowding in the Bethel Yukon Kuskokwim Correctional Center. So they added some capacity there. They drew from their deferred maintenance and other projects that were slated to go to get this work done. So this would be to basically replace the funds that they spent in order to get the facility and the overcrowding addressed in Bethel. Line 57, $1.1 million from EVOS for the purchase of a parcel on the Kenai River, and this is for access the Kenai River and came from the EVOS Trustee Council.
I thought that, excuse me, the EVOS money was supposed to be used for oil-damaged properties or something like that. No, maybe I'm wrong, but I thought they were only supposed to use that to purchase land that was impacted or could have been impacted by the oil spill.
Mr. Chairman, I can't really speak to you about the requirements of the EVOS funding. I do know that this came from their recommendation for this particular fund source and this particular purchase. So,
still, you know, we should look at it, I guess, and see. That's getting, as I would say, getting upriver from the spill.
Mr. Chairman, the next item on line 59 was some emergency repairs to the Cordova dock, and it's $1.2 million of general funds. The Line 60 vessel and terminal overhaul for the Alaska Marine Highway. As you know, the last several years we have had, I believe, about $7 or $8 million in the budget before you on an annual basis to do the overhauls that we can do some federal work on the major service on the ferries, but the annual overhaul type work we can't do with federal dollars. As the fleet continues to age, we have continuing issues with the vessels. In the FY13 capital budget, we have increased our general fund request to you for $10 million for the Marine Highway for Vessel and Terminal Overhaul, but we were short this year and had a couple of big projects that needed to get done. And let's see. On page 8, these are a couple of...
I have two questions on that page.
On 8?
7.
Thank
you, Mr. Chairman. On line 55, where did the redirect come from? What project had excess funds?
There, Mr. Chairman, Representative Faircloth, it wasn't that the projects had excess funds, it's that they needed to use those funds for this project. And it came from their deferred maintenance. And I think in the capital write-up, let me just get there real quick, they list the previous appropriations that were that they drew from, but they still would like to be able to complete those other projects. So that's why the request is in front of you. They diverted the funds to do this immediate emergency it wasn't repairs, but emergency to deal with the overcrowding of Bethel.
Mr. Chairman, on line 57, I'm wondering why that's in the supplemental versus just the regular capital budget for this year.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Faircloth, we talked about that. My understanding is there's a number of things that need to get done through DNR to be able to actually do the purchase and get started on preparing the boat launch. So they felt if they got started earlier this year, they could actually get to the work needed on the boat launch. So it was a timing decision. It's one that we talked about for 13, and then we decided we would put it in the supplemental.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And I think you'll hear that on a couple potential amendments coming up.
Mr. Chairman, on page 8, we have a couple of the items that, again, moving up into the supplementals to allow them to go out to bid this spring. So on line 68, you'll see a Nome runway project of $3.9 million in federal receipts. Their plan would be to advertise for construction in April. On Alaska, the runway safety area on line 69 for $3 million federal receipts, again, to be able to utilize this season, construction season. A $2.3 million federal receipt on line 71 for AMATS for trail rehab along the Glen Highway. And I think those are the main ones on the capital. On line or on page 9, these are where the two judgments and settlements are that I think are significant that the committee will want to talk about. Perhaps at a different discussion, we can have the Department of Law or others talk with you specifically about them. But on line 79, you'll see the $18 million for the Moore settlement, and this was the case, of course, having to do with, well, it started as a school funding case, and then it talked about really the state's role in helping low-performing districts to achieve success. The agreements here having to do with $18 million will be used over, I believe, a 5-year period. There'll be a committee that is appointed through the settlement that includes the Department of Education and the group that brought the suit forth to actually design the program and how the funds will be used.
I have a question on that. Maybe Representative Wilson found out, but we had some funds for the non-performing schools that we were giving them. Can we take that out of the operating budget now and replace it with this $18 million? I think there was a couple items for low-performance schools or something we had in there.
Mr. Chairman, these funds are specific to a settlement. I would have my immediate reaction would be that would be difficult to do whatever the legal framework of the settlement is, but I may not be the appropriate person to answer that.
The
Department of Law would probably be the better person to respond to that.
Did you find out anything, Representative Wilson?
Mr. Chair, we're meeting with the Attorney General to find out what we can and can't do. Part of the reason is because some of the programs may actually be going against each other, so we need to see what we can and can't do. I do have one question on that. Is there a reason why we're doing this all up front versus if it's supposed to be spent in the next 5 years that we're not billing it out in smaller amounts?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson, that may have been a conversation in their settlement negotiations, but they arrived at a one-time payment.
Thank you. And we'll get back to you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
On line 80, there are a number, and I think you have in your backup a list of all of the judgments and claims, and those we bring forward to you as we get them during the session. The largest one in there is the $20 million that I spoke about briefly on the optional retirement system for university professors. I apologize that I am not the best person to give you a lot of information about that, but it had to do with the change in the employer contribution rate when we made the change for TERS. In any case, I think that this was a settlement that the Department of Law and the plaintiffs came to agreement on. There'll be specific payments to the individuals in the class, and we'll resolve the litigation. So. And then finally, on page 87, you'll see a supplemental request for disaster relief. And you know that we have a very hard time predicting what the level of funding is going to need to be under disaster relief. And I suspect as we go through the session, there will be other items that we'll need to consider. But this is before you now, based on what we expect from the fall storms, the winter storms, and then looking to potentially some spring flooding or other events, given the winter we've had.
Or my hometown is slipping away.
Slumping away.
Hey, jeez, where's the love today?
And then we always at the there's some ratifications at the very bottom of the list, 97, 98, 99, and those are. Precise, they're supposed to be precise dollar amounts. So the one on line 97, fire suppression, is
$36,388.
$36,000? Oh. So I'm sorry, it was a decimal point in there. So those are very small items to bring before you.
Representative Costello.
Thank you, through the chair. Karen, my question has to do on page 9, the last line. Since there's no funding associated with this item, it seems like it's a legislative, sort of a statute-related change. I was wondering if you could explain that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Faircloth, I believe that this particular item, and we should... We should have some backup in here. Has to do with the ongoing AGEA efforts in the Department of Natural Resources. This is carry. This would be extending the lapse date on a previous appropriation. And I will look to see if I have in my backup the estimated amount. But we can get that for you.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a little bit of a follow-up on that. So is this like a reappropriation of a prior supplemental there?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Newman, there some of the AGEA appropriations were what you call a multi-year operating. So we come back and give you an estimate of what the amount that's available to continue on into the next fiscal year. I believe that's what this is. But let me, because I'm not quickly putting my fingers on the backup, we'll get that to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I don't see any other questions. Tomorrow's Friday. We're not working tomorrow.
Not working?
Monday, though.
Not working.
We're working, but not here at 1:30. How's that? We'll have a 5 o'clock tomorrow night. And then Monday, I think we're going to start at... We've been trying to work on the schedule up here, but I think we're going to start at 9 on Monday. Has that been finalized? We'll let you know tomorrow. So... No other comments, questions. Thank you, Ms. Rehfeldt, and putting up with us. We're as confused as ever, but we'll get there. Okay, with that.
Mr. Chair, it's totally up to you. That there is one confusing Department of Commerce bill. I think it was 118 that we held over, and it's being heard on Monday. I'm running home for a funeral this weekend, so I won't get back till 10 o'clock on Monday, but I wouldn't mind being...
Monday morning, if we do anything, will be the overview of
okay.
What, Medicaid, is it? Yeah.
Great.
But, yes, we won't hear any bills Monday morning. It'll be in the afternoon. Is that right, Joe? Right? Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to make an observation that the Department of Law has done a great job in trying to close off some cases that have been languishing for years. And while it doesn't feel good to take the hit necessarily financially, it is rewarding to know that we've reached some kind of conclusion that I hope both parties are satisfied with. Both on the educational side, we have multiple lawsuits that are being resolved, as well as across the state's administration. So I just really appreciate that we're getting ourselves out of some lawsuits and into some other ones to defend Alaska's state rights. Thank you.
Seeing nothing else here?
Just in time.
Okay, but never just tell them it's Monday morning at 9, but it's overview. So for that, we are adjourned.